This episode of the Justin Robert Young Show is brought to you by 354 of the most rad motherfuckers on the goddamn planet. Wink! Motherfucker shit on an old man's porch. It's time for another episode of the Justin Robert Young Podcast. Hello, my name is Justin Robert Young. A lot of my friends call me Jury. I'm playing on Hearthstone. Call me a lot of names. They call me Tavern Tom, Ladder Leroy, Casual Joe. But right here, in this very moment, you listening to me, friends, I'm just your old pal Gerbs. This is a podcast in which I tell you what is on my mind, and boy, do I have a lot of stuff on my mind, because it's been 2 weeks. Oh, wait, 2 weeks since I have talked to you like I am right now in Oakland on camera, live, ready to go. It's been a while. Since we've done a one mic show. 2 weeks ago, I interviewed Mama, and we put that up, and then, you know, last week we used the one man show as a placeholder. Hopefully, everybody enjoyed that. Hopefully, you know, people dug the one man show. I was playing for all of our live viewers a taste of the soundtrack that was playing in the room when everybody was walking in. It was a nice little 6 minute mix of a bunch of songs interspersed with an amazing Vince McMahon promo. If you follow me on SoundCloud, I'm going to post that there. If you would like to see the one man show, then go ahead and follow me on YouTube, youtube.com/JustinRobertYoung. I will upload the crystal clear in video and audio version of that as provided by Bryce Neshcom Castillo. So everybody go ahead and check that out. Now, I don't know what I was planning on talking about in this first segment. I just kind of wrote down just when I thought I was out, because I had been telling people that last weekend was the kind of pinnacle of my summer. I said to you, the listeners of this very show, that if I did not end this summer happy, wealthy, and married, I would end it dead. All right? Binary situation. One of two options. Either I am happy, creatively fulfilled, wealthy, my pockets on swole, and married, hitched like a bitch, or dead in the ground, 6 feet deep, okay? And what I would tell people was that last weekend was going to be the apex of the mountain. That sure, there would be a lot of stress, but at least I would be going downhill after last weekend. Why? Well, because I had the one-man show. I was really stressed out about that. I had the Contender launching on Kickstarter on that Friday. And I had Nerdtacular, one of the two major conventions that I have to do this summer. And holy shit, man, I looked at that Nerdtacular schedule, man. I was scheduled within an inch of my life, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Nerdtacular was fucking amazing. And the one-man show was great, man, but that was an emotional tour de force, and I don't know if I was really... I mean, it was therapy. It was just... I didn't realize how much it meant to me and how much of a part of me I was really missing. You know, when I used to do sketch comedy, the other people in the groups, plural, that I was in would like to relax or get centered before a show. Like, that's how they dealt with nervousness, was they would, like, have, like, a little meeting where everybody would, like, you know, kind of chant and breathe deep and stuff like that. And that was cool. That was cool for them. Not for me. I didn't like it. Okay. I would listen to Quentin Tarantino soundtracks, and I would just pace in a circle. Just get fucking, like, wound up. Just get fucking really excited and angry at things. I would find things to get angry about. I would make the performance not a artistic expression, but me destroying something. Like, I needed to dominate. I needed to get rage out, and I needed to do it in the way that I had chosen, which was this sketch comedy performance. And that's what I always do. And eventually they just got used to it, that I was just going to be a fucking madman, and I was just going to run around and just be like fucking like over 9,000. Like, before every show. And eventually it just became something that I did. So as come up, and especially on a show like this, where I'm very, you know, outpouring of my own emotions, you know, I've talked a little bit about in one of the early episodes of The Jury Show is interviewing Jake Goldman, who was in one of the groups that I was in. And we talked about me getting kicked out, and that is, so it's very important that you understand the context in this story. And if you would like to know the context, then go ahead and listen to that episode. But the short story is that I very much deserve to get kicked out of that group that I got kicked out of. But things are very important. That was the last time that I performed on stage, was with the Cleanest River in America group in New York City. And as I go into in that podcast, it happened at a very influential time. We had just gotten a month run at a pretty good theater. They had liked us. We did an audition show, and they liked us. And then I got kicked out of the group the first rehearsal for that run. And that stung me. You know, like that affected me a lot. And I've kind of gone into it, and podcasting has sort of been where I rehabilitated. Right? Because not a lot of shit affects me. And I pride myself on that. You know, there's not a lot that I think can fatally sort of, and I don't mean like in like literally like bah, 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 like you're dead fatally, but like fatally as in to end something that can fatally stop me. But for whatever reason, and whatever calculus in my head, that was painful enough, and performing on stage was not my goal enough, that I let it stop. It went dormant. Immediately after I got kicked out, I tried to do some other stuff, but I kind of, the painful elements of it, the stuff that I wasn't good at, I couldn't muster the courage to learn how to do. There was always a reason to tap out. I was also drinking a lot, he said while sipping his white wine. So flash forward to Salt Lake City, or rather Snowbird, Utah, where at Nerdtacular, I am an hour away from doing the show. And I find myself in a place that I haven't been in 8 years. I find myself preparing to go in front of people. And for whatever reason, it took me by surprise. It wasn't something that I was ready for. I had all of those, like that launch sequence was foreign to me. It had been nearly a fucking decade for me to do it. Except now, before I used to come up with random things that I would just be like, oh, well, like, I would invent disrespect in my head. I would be like, well, they don't think I'm funny, or they don't think I'm good, or, you know, somebody, sneered at me or didn't think this joke was going to work in rehearsal. I got to kill it. I got to make sure that joke fucking works. Right. And nobody was fucking after me. Right. And so now I find myself getting into that mode again, except this time I have some real pain that I am working through. But again, I find myself inventing villains. I find myself looking at shadows and thinking that they're boogeymen. And that manifestation was me going back and looking at all the fucking demo videos that Cleanest River in America did after I got kicked out. And I watched everything that was on the internet. And I just stood there just getting fucking like angry, just getting fucking like furious, just pacing again, just watching it and walking back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. You know, the soundtrack that played for everybody as they were walking into the room involves a cut up promo where Vince McMahon is looking into a mirror and going insane and deciding that he's going to ruin his own creation because he doesn't want anybody else to have it. And I find myself, unironically, mind you, unironically, I find myself looking in the mirror and saying, you think you could bury me? Did you think that? Did you think that I was going to stay gone? That you could take this away from me? That I was never going to come back? Like, I mean, I'm fucking literally having a nervous breakdown. I'm screaming into this mirror. I'm getting fucking so worked up. And then I went out and I did the show and I got that rage out. And for whatever reason, it was just cathartic. It was just fucking, it was, you know, and people are saying like, oh, so I was mad during the show. No, I wasn't mad. Like that's, I, for whatever reason, I don't know what it is. I think like the rage is just clarifying for me. It just makes me focus on just the show. It makes me shut out the rest of my brain. And, you know, this time I've got a lot more confidence than I used to, and I have a lot more maturity than I used to, and it was exhilarating. It was great. It was something that by the time that I hit in front of the audience, I mean, there was nothing to fear, because what I had was a clarifying vision. I had to do well, because if I didn't, and I didn't like what I did, then there's a very real chance that I don't know if I would ever do it again, because it's annoying to develop a stage show when you're used to just getting behind a microphone and bullshitting. Getting something together that has at least the fucking trappings of a performance, even one that is as allows for as much going around shit as mine did. It's fucking annoying, and it's hard, and it's tedious, and it's time-consuming. So it's like, it had to make me feel good, and it did. And so I want to thank everybody who was there. I want to thank everybody who, you know, supported it and who was excited for it. I want to thank everybody in advance. If you're going to watch the YouTube that I put up at youtube.com/JustinRobertYoung. And I just want everybody to know that, like, it was certainly a lot more emotional than I thought it was. But the result was that I really had a great time. And I enjoy that lunatic. I enjoy that petty, angry, thin-skinned lunatic that I became and become, you know, before an event, and I forgot that he existed, and it was great to see that, and now now all I have are ideas on how to do more live stuff. So I'm very, very excited. Thank you all for watching. I have a shit ton to talk about. We're going to figure out what the line of politically incorrect is in the Trump era. We're going to talk about Dr. Dre's new album, Compton. I'm going to tell you why, even though the movie flopped, the Fantastic Four is the best thing ever. It's all coming up here on The Jury Show. This is the morning stream. I'm an impression of Scott Fletcher. all right. So thank you guys so much for watching and listening to this. Like, there is something about this show that just puts me in such a fucking good mood. And I was so stressed out because what I didn't get to in that first segment is that, like, I thought that last weekend was the apex and everything went right. Everything that I could want to go right went right. The Kickstarter, the Ken Tender Kickstarter has gone amazing. The one man show went fantastic. The Nerdtacular was, of course, just this fucking amazing, gigantic hug of a weekend. But yet this week, man, did a day trip to LA and then flew from LA to San Francisco, got on a red eye to go to Cincinnati, was in Cincinnati, found myself at, I got a hard time winding down. I found myself, I had to get on a flight at 6:30. 6:30 was when it took off, which meant that I needed to be out of the airport at 5:30, which meant we probably had to leave the hotel at like 4:45. And at midnight, I had just sat down at a random river bar in fucking Kentucky by myself, like not with anybody, not fucking, for any reason, like just because I'm restless and I just need to do things and I can't go to sleep sometimes. And that was what was happening. So anyway, I'm doing a lot, and I just looked at my Go Game schedule before I went live, and I was just like, fuck, like, I got so much to do. I have still so much to do, and, like, there will be no break between now and the wedding. Like, we are gonna fucking roll into this wedding, and, like, I hope there's something left of me. Like, I hope, like, the wheels are gonna be fucking, like, I'm gonna be, the gas tank is just gonna be like maybe, for, I don't know why that was a donkey sound, for whatever. Like, it's just going to be, like, hovering under E, because, like, it is going to be rough. But at least I have this, and at least I have you guys. So thank you so much. Here's what else I got. I got Donald Trump, and let me just say, here comes the money. Money, 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 money. That is the sound of the Contender Kickstarter, thecontender.us/Kickstarter. We have blown past our fucking expectations, man. This thing, who knows where it's going to hit, but right now it's at about 45,000. We're about to unlock our first major stretch goal, which is at 1,000 backers. We are only like 30 away from that. So thank you to everybody who has donated, who has bought themselves a deck or decks of the Contender. Go ahead, and if you have not visited thecontender.us/Kickstarter, we, in support of it, did a live stream for the Republican debate on Wednesday. And as part of that, we created 9 new cards, 8 action cards, and 1 topic card. Of course, when you back the Kickstarter, we give you a print and play of the base deck, so you can play it. You can print it out and you can play it. Somebody made an awesome box for it. you know, by himself. Like, they just like did an awesome thing. So anyway, we go ahead and do this live stream. And when I sing the Shane McMahon Here Comes the Money song in reference to how much we've made on the Kickstarter, I mean that fucking Donald Trump is just making us this green right now. God damn, son. Didn't know you got down like that, Donald. Fucking throwing money on my face. Because the only reason why people give a shit about the Republican primary this early is because there's a fucking barking dog lunatic running around barking like a dog who's also a lunatic. It's crazy. Donald Trump walked into that debate and literally just did it like it was an interview. Like he had none of the guile of a politician, which many have found admirable. And like, I find it interesting. I don't know how admirable I find it. Like, I don't think the people who are you know, in all honesty, at a job interview to be the leader of the free world should necessarily be just winging it. Like, I think that that's something that is interesting to watch. But I don't know how much. There's a lot of people that are like, well, yeah, man, he just talked to us. It's like, yeah, but should you? You know, if you're at an interview, are you just going to like, yeah, whatever, dude, bullshit. I mean, I guess I'm the right guy. Like, no, you're going to put a little thought into it. You're going to angle your message. You're going to see how you can best achieve your goals. So Donald Trump immediately kind of, you know, people have said that the moderators were unfair. I didn't think that they were unfair at all. Like, they asked pointed questions. It just so happens that because Donald Trump lives without guile and isn't a politician, he's got a lot of tough questions that people got to ask him. Now, if you want to know how he could have lived that life and answered those questions correctly, look back at how Arnold Schwarzenegger ran for governor in California. Like, Arnold Schwarzenegger came right out and said, yeah, every drug. I've done all of the drugs. Every one of them. So you can ask me if I've done a drug, but know that I will refer to you to this answer, which is all of them. So there. Like, he did a great job of understanding that he has liabilities and then working around them in a political way. Donald Trump has not. So Donald Trump gets asked by Megyn Kelly, hey, you called a lot of women a lot of things, like pigs and dogs and slobs. You said that a member of the Celebrity Apprentice, a female member, would be a pretty picture if she were on her knees. So he gets a Rosie O'Donnell joke back, which shows you, I mean, like, that is admirable. Not the fact that he fucking lit into Rosie O'Donnell, but, like, the fact that he is in front of as many people as he is in front of on live television, and he has the state of mind to make a joke. That landed pretty well. People laughed. So he responds to the question after the guffawing fades and says, I'm not politically correct, and I think it's a problem in our country that we are too politically correct, because we lose all the time and we should be winning. So let's parse that. Let's parse that. The idea of political correctness is something that has fascinated me since that debate. What is politically incorrect? Because in my head, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com, put J-U-R-Y in the subject line. Again, that is justinrobertyoung@gmail.com, put J-U-R-Y in the subject line. I want to know what you believe politically incorrect to be as a term. Here's what I believe. I believe that politically incorrect is a reaction to what all the other candidates were saying during that debate. In that, you know, and this is an example I use with Brian on the Weird Things After Show, that if somebody is on stage and they are asked about whether they are pro-life or pro-choice, and they say, I believe that life begins at conception, I believe that adoption is the best strategy for unwanted children. I believe that it is a shame that we have killed so many young lives in this country because of the practice of abortion. And then you end what you have, what your statement is. What you really mean is, I am morally opposed to it, but I am not going to try and make it illegal. Because politically, what you want is to not piss off people that might vote for you while not promising that you are going to do something that you are not going to promise. So you appeal to the emotion without promising a hard path of action. Now, a politically incorrect statement would be, I'm not going to do shit about Roe versus Wade. That's the difference between politically correct and politically incorrect. Now, colloquially, what it has come to mean is that you do not want to offend people. That you want to make sure that you are continuing to appeal to the broadest possible spectrum by not offending people. Now, make no mistake, in the year 2015, there's been an awakening. Have you felt it? The internet has changed the game fundamentally. The more that we spend connected to each other via Twitter, Facebook, Hinge, Tinder, Snapchat, email, the more that we stay abreast of our emotions, the more we care about each other's emotions. So yeah, you can say that we are moving into a more sensitive age and that people are more sensitive about what they say and how they say it. But I don't believe it is just some softening of our willingness to say some shit. I think it's a realization that people might hear it. Increasingly, there is less and less time for us to say things behind somebody's back. Like, we literally need to be in a room without any social media for that to happen. Now it's very easy to communicate. So when Donald Trump says, I'm not politically correct, and it's a problem in this country, A, I think it's a little weird because it's like, all right, I would have been saving the world if you weren't all upset about the fact that I called a woman a slob. All right. Or I would have been studying for this debate if it weren't for the fact that everyone's all upset about the fact that I later on CNN insinuated that it was Megyn Kelly's period. And that's why she asked me a hard question. All right. Like, I don't know. Even if you disagree, even if you think that we are soft as a nation and that we get too easily upset about stuff. All right. That's fine. I'm down with that. You can tell me that. That's okay. But I don't know what the net negative is, aside from just you being annoyed. Like, I don't get that. I don't understand where there is a problem. Like, I don't understand where you are losing time. Because really, if you're upset by it and you're saying every time I hear it, it takes time out of my day because I need to respond, then that's a self-control problem. You still need to answer that. You know, you can say what I think he wanted to say, which is, I'm just kidding. Stop worrying about it. You're worrying about it too much. I didn't mean anything by it. It's a stupid, but so there we go. That would just be a statement. But really, he's thin skin and he's like, oh, it's a stupid question. So now I'm going to make you pay for what I think to be a stupid question. But that goes back to what is politically correct? And does it need to be offensive? And here's where I would draw the line. My favorite comedians, all of them, without fail, Richard Pryor, George Carlin, Dave Chappelle. Dave Attell. All these people, Mel Brooks, all these people, they are very offensive. Louis C.K., very, very, very offensive. If you take the shit that they say out of context, it's intensely offensive. And yet, they are lauded. Why? Because it is a minefield and they spend a lot of fucking time learning how to dance through it. You need to know what you are saying if it is to be offensive. It is my opinion that you should not make any statement that could be found offensive by other people unless you are fucking as sure as you can be that you have thought about not only your feelings on it, but the opposition's feelings on it more than they have felt about yours. So when you get into a conversation and when you are meant to defend what you have said, be it comedic or not, you can prove to them that this was not reckless Molotov cocktail throwing, but rather that it is a point made to advance the discourse, if even by lancing the boil with humor. Donald Trump has done literally zero of that, which is why I have to again challenge his definition of what politically incorrect is. Because I don't think he's being politically incorrect. I really just think he's being a cunt. For the record, that is what I disagree with Trump the most. Like, it is nothing political. It is the fact that I think it is disrespectful to everybody who has advanced discourse on gender, sex, and religion to just randomly throw fucking bombs in a way that I think is a way that he hasn't thought about it. Defend politically incorrectness. Defend it. If you ever want to make an off-color joke again, if you ever want to say a point that you believe is outside the fucking mainstream, then you owe it to yourself to say, Donald Trump, you are not being politically incorrect. You're being a cunt. Okay. And I mean that in the Irish sense, not the misogynistic term. Although, you know, fucking whatever. Okay. C-O-M-P-T-O-N is an album. Compton. Coming straight out of Compton. Dr. Dre is a Apple executive. Andre Young, rather, is a Apple executive. He sold his startup to Apple, as many startups have been sold to Apple. He is the first billionaire in a subgenre that he likes to call hip-hop. He, in his side business, you know, when he's not being a executive at the most profitable company in the world, Andre's side project is as what the kids call a DJ. He's made three albums. One's called The Chronic. One's The Chronic 2001. And one is Compton. Available right now on Apple Music. All three of them are available on Apple Music. Compton is great. I really liked it. When I was at that random Kentucky River Bar, Cellar Beer, by the way, is where I was. I was listening to that. I got myself a cigar at the Party Source and then walked on over to Cellar Beer and just sat and watched the boats, boat on by and listened to Compton. I really, really liked it. But I got on a phone call with my buddy Anthony. Now, the Anthony that might sound like the Anthony I was talking about in my one-man show, It's not Anthony. Not that Anthony, the one who went to Plantation. And we were talking about the Chronic 2001. And he was like, yeah, no, I listened to Compton. I don't think it was good as the Chronic 2001. And I was like, well, yeah, you know, I mean, it doesn't have a Forgot About Dre on it. That's true. But, you know, it's, I don't know if it needs to in 2015. And B, like, you really can't separate the fact that the Chronic 2001 was like a soundtrack to my youth. Like, maybe if I have a hell of a year, which is certainly happening right now, and I continue listening to Compton, I will look back in 10 years and say, wow, you know, Compton was the soundtrack of one of the greatest years of my life. And I will look back on it in fondness. But right now, I really don't think it can compare to an era of like uncertainty and hormones and friendship and beer and pot and trying to fuck people. Like, you know, there's just a lot going on, a lot of drama. And if there's one thing drama loves, it's a soundtrack. So like, the Chronic 2001 was that for me. And I think it's hard to look at new works of art and separate the nostalgia from it. Now, separate topic, although related, Fantastic Four comes out. The movie bombs. It sucks. It's the lowest rated comic book movie of all time by CinemaScore and by Rotten Tomatoes. It is the lowest money-making movie, superhero money-making movie, since The Green Hornet, which really is like stretching the definition of a superhero movie. So you got a lot of people saying, maybe the Fantastic Four just doesn't work. Maybe it's just time we just bury the Fantastic Four, and in a couple years we'll try and reboot it again. Or, you know, the most sensible, Marvel should just get Fantastic Four and it would be great. And that's true. That last one, ha! Gotcha. If you fucking thought one of the other two were right, you were wrong. The last one was right. Of course the last one was right. You want to know why? Because Fantastic Four, regardless of nostalgia, regardless of its origins in the 50s and 60s, regardless of what has been done since then, the Fantastic Four is the greatest fucking property that hasn't been done well in comics. Okay? Here's why. The Fantastic Four is the greatest meditation on fame that we have ever seen. Think of all the members. Reed Richards. Actually, no, fuck that. Let's start with the thing. The thing. The consequences of fame. What if you are trapped by your notoriety? What if you are imprisoned by your strength? The thing is Chris Farley. The thing is John Belushi. If they could not be who they were, they would. In their fleeting moments, they would wish that they could just be normal, except they can always do good. They can always provide. They can always get laughs. They can always be there for somebody or themselves. And at the end of the day, that prison is the story. That's what makes the thing a great character. Is that he's trapped in a prison, and yet, when the character is written at its best, he's happy. He's come to a grudging peace, but he's never forgotten that he's jailed. He's never forgotten that he yearns to be free. Then you have the Human Torch. The Human Torch is Lindsay Lohan. The Human Torch is Amanda Bynes. The Human Torch is every fucking teen mom chick who's, contracted with some porn company to fake release a sex tape. The fame has engulfed them And yeah, it's fucking really enjoyable for part of it. But at the end of the day, you are self-destruction personified. Even when you do something good, you are at the risk of injuring everybody around you. You are a danger to yourself and others by definition. That's Johnny Storm. Reed Richards. Reed Richards is fucking Tom Hanks. You ever wonder why Tom Hanks doesn't give a fuck about the fact that he's super fucking famous? Probably because he handles it really well. Probably because he's the example that this is survivable. That fame is something that you can use to your advantage. The Invisible Wife? I mean, come on. Do I even need to explain it to the Diamond Club crowd? Do I even need to explain it? It's the fucking, I mean, here we go, in an era of greater interconnectedness, in an era where we're more aware about gender disparities, then do we need fucking any other female character to be done well than Sue Storm, the invisible wife, I mean woman, the person who is in the shadows of three fucking men, no matter what she does, the fact that she is just as brilliant as Reed Richards, the fact that she is the fucking Wendy to the Lost Boys of Thing and the Human Torch, that she carries more of a burden than anybody and yet remains invisible. Which brings us to the greatest comic book villain of all time. That if the movies for the Fantastic Four have been dog shit, they are fucking on the waterfront compared to the treatment that Victor Von Doom has received. Because Victor Von Doom is not a comic book supervillain. Victor Von Doom is a real life supervillain. If you were truly evil, and you were truly smarter than those around you, and what you truly craved was power, what would you do? You would take over a country, a poor, embattled, hungry country. That's what Victor Von Doom does. That's why that story's important. Because it's Saddam Hussein's story. Because it's Charles Taylor's story. Because it's the story of how a dictator is created. It's a story of what happens if those dictators weren't thugs. What if those dictators were brilliant? Victor Von Doom is closer to Hitler than any comic book character has ever dared to be. And yet, we get bullshit. He's on some planet or some shit, or he's like really vain, so he fucking puts his mask on and it burns him. And like, yeah, those all take elements from the character, but like, fucking why? Why don't we fucking pay attention to the greatest fucking comic book characters? Somebody said today, comic or on Twitter, I see, because I'm the guy who reacts to one dude on Twitter, says the Fantastic Four is hokey. It belongs in the 50s and 60s. It's from a bygone era. Bullshit. We are more aware right now of fucking fame and its prices and dictators and their consequences. The Fantastic Four has never been more relevant. And it's a goddamn shame we just keep getting bullshit movies about them. I want to see a good movie.
Email
this show, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Again, that is justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Put J-U-R-Y in the subject line. Huh? First one comes in from Kent. Man, also, a lot of these emails are going to be old because, again, it's been a little bit since we've done a show. Let's begin. Kent. Hi, Justin. Just listened to your mother episode of The Jury Show. I enjoyed it very much, and I applaud you for the love and respect you show your mom. My mom passed away about a month ago. It is one of the most difficult things I've had to endure. Like yours, my mother was always my greatest supporter and most vocal cheerleader. Whenever it seemed like the whole world was against me, I could call my mom, and she would remind me that I was loved and reinstill my confidence in myself. That has been extremely valuable to me throughout my life, even as I recently, as a couple months ago, and I'm 38. I'm very saddened that I will never hear her reassuring voice again. I quite often reach for my phone to text her, only to remember that she's gone. I'll miss her greatly. I guess the point of this email is to say that moms are special and that they should be celebrated, not taken for granted. I'm delighted that you display that level of respect, admiration, and love to your mom. I sincerely hope that you have several more decades with that special lady. Number one, my mom will never die. And I'm just going to keep rolling with that until I get proved wrong. Number two, I want everybody, you know, when it comes to stuff like this, I think we get really myopic about like, oh, mom, dad, blood, family, that kind of stuff. I want everybody to just, you know, think of that everyone has a person, hopefully. Hopefully you have a person in your life that fits the description that Kent just gave. And if that's your mom, rad. If that's your dad, rad. You know, for me, it very much is my mom, but it's also a lot of other people. And I don't want people to just get mixed up with like the fact that like, you know, well, I have a shitty relationship with my mom or I have a shitty relationship with my dad. Because like, just go ahead and thank the person that has been there for you, you know, regardless of their relationship and family to you. Thank you, Kent, for writing in. Phil writes about the joke, the nacho cheese joke. And holy shit, man, I got a bunch of email on this. And, you know, for those of you who didn't listen, I went through the nacho cheese joke, the, like, you know, wheels rolling, wheel of cheese is rolling down the street and someone's yelling, it's nacho cheese! It's not yo cheese! So I got a lot of email. I got a lot of feedback on Twitter. I got a fucking like 8,000 word thesis on Twitter about, you know, how, I don't know, everything and nothing is racist at the same time. So that's exactly what Phil writes in. Phil, everything is racist, really. We've been calling our racist board game lately on computing. I agree with the localization of the joke being key. I grew up in Texas and it was very specifically a racist joke, but there is a Hispanic who served as the punchline. So basically, if you didn't listen to the thing, I was wondering whether or not the nacho cheese joke is racist, because I've heard it a couple different ways, and one of the ways I heard it was very much about a black guy, and the joke, the point of the joke, was that black people say not yo funny, which is a racist idea. So, yeah. All right. So I think we can all settle on the idea that it is racist depending on whether or not you heard it from a racist who told it to you in a racist way. And now we can be done with that topic. Gabriel writes, I'm making a trip down to the Bay Area and I'm meeting with an old roommate who's driving down from Humboldt and we are meeting up for the weekend and hanging out with some other friends and roommates since it's been a while since we've seen each other. Here's where it gets interesting. My ex-girlfriend lives in San Francisco and she'd be really upset if I went to SF and didn't tell her. We are still friends and keep in contact with one another. So I told her I was coming up, and she said she'd like to go out for drinks. Here's the thing. She just recently broke up with her current boyfriend. Here's the other thing. This girl is my GWB, Great White Buffalo, a.k.a. the one who got away. I've been stuck on this girl for 3 years, not in some 500 days of summer bullshit. I've had flings and I've gone out with other girls since. But what should I expect? How should I behave? Which topic should I avoid? And am I an idiot for even telling her that I was coming up? Now, I wish, if you're only listening to this, that I can read to you what is happening in the chat room. Because it is just, and I'm going to read verbatim, trap, Nope. Warning. Nope. Warning. Run. Run away. Run. Nope. Big ol' nope. Nope. Evacuate immediately. Nope. I'm gonna zig where the others zag. I don't think it's a bad idea. Here's why. Now, you gotta understand that Gabriel, motherfucker, you're playing advanced Dungeons and Dragons if you take my advice. If you are not ready to come to a next level understanding of yourself and your feelings and take control of your life in a serious way, then this advice is not for you. You need to listen to everybody who is telling you, no, 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 stay away in the chat room. All right? So if this is, if I'm just going to let you know, this is fucking advanced magics and potions at Hogwarts that I'm going to give you right now. Here's what's going to happen. You're going to go out for drinks. You're going to bullshit. You're going to reconnect. And there is a higher than average likelihood that you're going to fuck. This is just how these situations work, which is why it's very attractive. If you are not ready to... you have to be prepared to never talk to that person again. Now, not because you want to be a dick. Not because you want to fucking run. Because this is far more complicated than that. But you got to understand that, you know, Brenda and Eddie could never go back to the Village Green, as Billy Joel sang. Okay? You can never go home again. The relationship that you are pining for is dead. Dead as Dillinger. If you were to fuck this person, you know, in one moment where two human beings with jagged emotions can connect and remember what they had for one night, then you got to understand that this is not you fucking reconnecting. This is you going to the pet cemetery, burying your feelings, and having it come back a little mangy and a little more dangerous than it was before. So anything that you have, anything that you could share, any emotions that you bring up, you have to be ready to put that motherfucker in a glass jar and put it on top of your shelf. And more importantly and more dangerously, if the other person, your ex-girlfriend, comes to you and says, I can't stop thinking about you. I have feelings for you. You just reminded me of how things were so good. You've got to be the worst thing. The adult. You've got to be the one to say, about that. I'm not here. You're not here. And we're moving on. We're moving out. Because I'm going to quote two Billy Joel songs in one piece of advice. You're going to be sleeping with the television on. That's three. You got it. You have to understand that this is the end of your relationship with her and not a beginning. If you can truly understand that, if you can truly say that this is not something that is a continuation, but rather it is a brief portal to another moment and a time where you can kind of, you know, get your fuck on, potentially. I mean, obviously, it's up to her, right? And you, right? But, potentially, because oftentimes that's what this is about. Because let's be fucking honest, right? She just broke up with somebody. She's a single girl in San Francisco. It's filled with, you know, hippie dick sucks and fucking, you know, bro coders and shit like that. And she's dealing with a bunch of fucking weirdos. So all of a sudden, some kindly ex-boyfriend comes in. Can't blame her for picking up a little dick in the fucking long road of life. Here's a sweet little convenience store for which dick that you have had before comes on tap with no strings attached. I don't blame the lass. But you got to understand it's just that. And more specifically, she comes back, you got to say, sorry, honey, that train's left the station. Shannon writes, my name is Shannon and I've been relatively a new listener. Or I have relatively been a new listener. I've been listening to the backlog of the new shows that you put up on the feed. And I love, love, love the Neon Signs episodes. They were hilarious. Well, thank you. Just listened to episode 69 and your Allie talked about being locked out without her top and had to get a spare key. Got me to thinking that'd be an awesome idea for a future episode in the same vein as Neon Signs. With that being said, here's my story. I was a new freshman in college. My first morning there, I went to take a shower. Shower was only a short walk down the hall, so I went wrapped in just a towel with my shower caddy. Don't laugh. All the new college students have them. Oh, come on, man. I went to college in the early aughts. I had a shower caddy. What the fuck? Upon exiting my room, and just as it closed behind me, I realized I did not have the key. Oops. Here's the kicker. To get my spare key, I had to go to the first floor office, which just so happens to be an all-male floor. So here it was, a new freshman, naked in just a towel, doing the walk of shame down the hall to get the key to my room. As you can imagine, I received several leering looks from all the males in that part of the dorm. My face was hot and bright red as I made my way to the office, where the workers also had a few giggles at my expense. I received more whistles and catcalls back to my room. But I made it back in one piece and I had a good laugh at myself. Needless to say, I had my key with me always after that. Hope you enjoyed my tale. Keep up the good work, Shannon. Well, Shannon, thank you so much for writing in. I do appreciate it. However, come on. Like, who hasn't fucking, you know, walked around in just a towel? Like, that's part of the collegiate experience, I feel. For whatever reason, when I first read that email, I thought that it was you, that you had lost your towel and you had to write, like, naked. But I'll tell you what, you do come up with a good idea. If you have any naked, embarrassing stories, I don't know, I feel like we need a good name for it, like Neon Signs. Neon Signs was really, really good. How about Naked Truths? We need Naked Truths, stories in which you were, found yourself to be, naked in a public setting in an embarrassing and sudden way, and you had to deal with it. Or fuck it, just any story that's funny because you were naked. Write it in, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. That is J-U-R-Y in the subject line. Again, that is J-U-R-Y in the subject line. Ladies and gentlemen, we have brought ourselves to the closing of another episode. However, if between now and the next time that I speak to you, you find yourself in a moment, of vulnerability, find yourself yelling at yourself in the mirror like you're Vince McMahon or Justin Robert Young, frustrated about grievances bygone, if you find yourself dick deep in your ex-girlfriend and you are unable to cope with the emotions, I want you to do a few things. First, remind yourself that you can find this podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, or some other shit. That you can always email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Put jury in the subject line. That's J-U-R-Y. And Twitter and Instagram, as well as Snapchat, Justin R. Young. Hashtag join the conversation at diamondclub.reddit.com. And support The Contender at thecontender.us/Kickstarter. And when you remind yourself of all that, I want you to hear my dulcet tones as I remind you that every listener of this show, nay, everybody in this great country, nay, everybody in the world needs to understand that my name is Justin Robert Young, and you should please don't! Yeah.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.